Welcome to the IHSAA Insider as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of girls basketball at the Indiana High School Athletic Association. My name is Jane Schott, Assistant Commissioner in charge of girls basketball. We are talking with players, coaches, and officials who have impacted the evolution of the game in our state. As we've always heard, in 49 other states, it's just basketball. But this is Indiana High School girls basketball. Sit back and enjoy reminiscing with the legends of Indiana. Today we are joined by Patty Broderick, a special guest because she's a little different than all of our guests that we've had before. We've had lots of coaches, we've had lots of players, and now we get to talk to a longtime official who got her start in officiating here in the great state of Indiana. She is an Indiana native, so we're going to hear her story in a moment, but she did 1982 and 1983 state finals, and she also has done seven Final Fours, six WNBA championships, two ABL. She is the first, 1999, when we had the inaugural WNBA All-Star Game, she was the first. She was also the first woman on the Pan Am Games as an official, 1987. And in 1988, she got to do an Olympics at Seoul. So we have lots to talk about with Patty. Lots of awards for you. You're a member of the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame as an official, which is unbelievable that we would let an official in, right? You know, that's something that's really cool. And also the 1995 Distinguished Hoosier Award by Evan Bayh, a very special award because he was the governor who brought in the Title IX. So all of these awards, and really what I want to know, Patty, is I want to hear your story. How did you get started doing this?
Well, actually, Jane, I got started doing it by being out in the driveway with my brothers and they playing basketball and them fighting and arguing all the time. So they say, well, Patty will just decide if it's a foul or not. So that's really how it started. Then after that, when I graduated from high school at Cardinal River High School on the west side, they were starting a little, CYO was starting a little girls basketball program for 9-year-olds, which never had any kind of organized ball for basketball in the state of Indiana until then. And so Monsignor Kavanaugh from St. Michael's came over and asked, would I be interested? Because St. Michael's is the feeder school into Cardinal River and their parking lots butt up to each other. Hey, would you coach little girls? And I was like, okay. So, and that's kind of how it started. Yeah. And it just so happened that on those teams, I had some nieces. So it was kind of a natural, like, you got to do this, Patty, because your nieces are on the team. And that's kind of how we started. But the officiating piece was to get the program going. The coaches had to officiate either the game before or the game after, because we didn't have any money to pay officials to referee the game. So that's pretty much how it started. The next year, CYO said, I think all you coaches should go take the high school test. So at least we know the rules for this program to be successful. Okay. And that's where it started.
That's where it all began. 1972. And we didn't even have IHSAA basketball yet until 1976. But you probably were doing some games even though it wasn't a sanctioned sport yet. Is that true?
That's true. Yeah. And a lot of it was CYO. Yeah. And the director of CYO then, his name was Bill Koontz. Mm-hmm. And he said, because we had little boys and then we had little girls and then we had freshman, sophomore, junior and senior play that if they didn't make their high school team, they played CYO. Mm-hmm. So he started me off pretty early and said, hey, I want you to do boys basketball. And I was like, just don't think I want to do that. And he said, nope, I think I want you to do that. So I started refereeing boys basketball, junior, senior, freshman, sophomore, and CYO before we even had tournaments.
That's great. Do you remember your first girls high school game that you got to do?
You know, I can't really.
Yeah,
sorry,
that's okay.
About that.
Well, how many games? Here's the other question. Do you have any idea how many games you officiated in your career?
Oh, gosh, no.
I have no idea, I'm sure.
But, you know, at every level, it started out, I mean, I even did IPS.
Yeah.
And you do three games a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, you made, I don't know, $10 a game. And then, you know, you do your three games, and then it was a Sunday, and somebody wouldn't show up. So the next thing you do would be four or five games a day and be one referee. Jeez. And the half the time you were out there on the floor, you were just saying, hey, that's a travel. Yeah. Or, but you wouldn't call everything. So you were mostly coaching and teaching.
Yeah,
and just kind of some semblance on the floor so they didn't kill each other. You know, that kind of fond memories of all that. Fond memories.
Do you remember the state finals in 1982? I'll jog your memory a little bit. You did in 82, you did the championship game with Heritage and Valpo. And then in 83, you did the afternoon game with Indianapolis Howe and Bedford North Lawrence. Does that ring a bell at all?
Yeah. Well, Howe does. Obviously that's in Indianapolis, but no. Yeah. No. The only thing I can really remember is back then players like Judy Warren.
Yeah.
And Cindy Scott.
Yeah.
Even Sharon Versip.
Yeah.
Playing Indiana basketball in the day, right?
Right.
Right. You.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think I ever had you in high school, but it would have been, I went to Purdue in 87, and that's where I remember you officiating. So when did you make that transfer from high school officiating to the collegiate level?
About 83, 84.
Yeah.
Because I tell you, it's a crazy story. I started a little bit, and then I had my daughter. And I kind of, for about a year, I kind of like didn't really mess with it much.
Yeah.
And then when I worked at the state election board, the Indiana State Election Board, I think it's called Board of Elections now, there was a colleague that worked with me, and she said, you know what, they're having a basketball continuing education program somewhere. I can't even remember where it was, but it was affiliated with IUPUI. She says, I'm going to go take that and I'm going to make some extra money. I said, I referee. And she goes, no, you don't. She said, will you go with me? I said, yeah, I'll go over there with you. I said, that'd be fine. And so Linda Mason, I don't know if you remember Linda Mason.
Yes,
used to be Coach at Butler.
Yeah.
She coached the class.
Oh, God.
I mean, she taught the class. So she said, hey, do you need rule books? I said, no, I got some. I got my own. And she said, why are you here? And I said, well, I just laid out for a little while, you know, I just had a baby, and, you know, I've just kind of taken a little time off, and I wasn't real sure I was going to go back and do it until my colleague said, let's go do it. And then Linda goes, will you help me teach the class? And guess what?
I went quickly.
I know. And then I went over and she said, Patty, we got to get referees for our own teams at Butler. That back in the day, there was no assigner.
Yeah.
So I went over and started reffing Butler's games. I said, I can't ref every one of these games. She goes, oh, yeah, you can. You can ref every one of these games.
That's funny.
Things that you did back then.
Right.
Things that you did back then. And that's how I met Cheryl Weatherman,
mm-hmm.
who she was at Franklin.
Yeah.
And she was the chair of the IA, National Women's Sports, Girls in Sports.
Yeah.
And she was the chair of our state.
Okay.
And I ran into her, and she took me to an exhibition game at Purdue.
Oh, wow.
With Coach Ruth Jones.
Yep.
Nancy Cross.
Yep.
Is that in your day?
That was. So Ruth Jones was the first person who ever recruited me from Purdue. Now, she passed of cancer before. I never signed with her. She passed of cancer when I was a sophomore in high school. So, but that's cool. Now, of course, Nancy Cross was there. And,
Nancy's still there.
Yeah, she has. She's since retired in terms of the athletic, she was a mainstay for a long time.
At, oh, my goodness. And it was funny, Jane, after the game was over, because I was a nervous wreck. I mean, I was like early.
Yeah.
Maybe 25. 24, 25, 26, maybe, scared to death. And after the game was over, we went out to dinner with Ruth Jones and Nancy Cross with the team.
That's great. I love it.
Back then, you could ride the bus with the team, and everybody was happy and caring and thankful. Things have changed.
Yeah, thankful. Right. Everybody was kind of in on it together, and that maybe has changed over the years.
Lots of things have changed since then, but they were fun times, and that's kind of how that all started.
And a lot of your collegiate, you know, career as an official, you did a lot of Big Ten games because that's where you and I, our relationship started. But then did you do other conferences, or were you pretty regional at that time?
No. I did a whole lot of conferences. And here we started, 84, let's see, no. I don't even remember when my college career started, somewhere around 83, 84, 85. But I officiated in the SEC and the Big East and the ACC, all of those leagues. I predominantly worked in the ACC and the SEC. But in 1992. Up until 1992, you could ref and be a coordinator. And I started being a coordinator in 1986.
Right.
It was my first at the time it was what were we called? It's the Horizon League now, but it was called Midwestern Collegiate Conference.
Okay.
And then it changed to the Horizon League. So that was my first coordinator job. I was hired by Commissioner Jim Schaefer. In 1987, I was hired by Wayne Duke, commissioner in the Big Ten. And I filled Marcy Weston's job because Marcy went to become the national coordinator. The NCAA decided to have an NCAA tournament. We had a national coordinator. And so that's when I took over for her. Well, we could still ref and coordinate at the same time. I just couldn't ref in the Big Ten anymore because I signed the Big Ten. And so that's why I work predominantly in the SEC.
Let's talk about some of your Final Fours. Do you have anyone that are very memorable that you can just, you know, was a great game or something happened, something that you would pull out of your memory bank to share with us?
Yeah, it's not a fond memory.
It's not a fond memory. I'll let you give me a good one in a minute.
It is a good one. And I think of it today. Because, you know, you learned from it, but it was just, there was nothing I could do at the time to change it. But it was, 92, 93, you'll have to go back and look at the record books, but it was Final Four.
Yeah.
Final game. And it was Virginia, Tennessee, Debbie Ryan coaching Virginia, Dawn Staley, Bird Twins.
Yeah.
On the Virginia team.
Yeah.
And then we had, I can't remember all the players on the Tennessee team, but Pat Summitt was coach at Tennessee. And we had Tammy Reese on the buzzer shoot a three-pointer.
Yeah.
This is back, we only had two officials. Shot a three-pointer that was like 75 feet.
Uh-huh.
So got my hand up in the air. That's a three-point shot. And official underneath while the ball is sailing has a whistle while the ball's in the air.
Uh-huh.
And he's going, no shot, no shot, no shot. Well, guess what? That thing is a banker right off the box into the net. No basket, no basket. I run to my partner and say, hey, we got to count that basket. It was in the air before your whistle went.
Yeah.
No shot, no shot, no shot, you know. So I'm trying to, I'm telling you now, it's a good basket. Needless to say, Debbie Ryan's like, and I can still remember what she's wearing. She had a flowered dress on and a white pinafore collar. And
you remember what
she's
wearing.
You know, oh my goodness, it was awful. But needless to say, we didn't change it. We went into overtime. Virginia should have run in regulation, and Tennessee wins in overtime.
Oh my.
Yes.
That's, oh golly.
So, and Dawn Staley was on the Virginia team. So when when I went into the Hall of Fame, it's a funny story, in 2008, in Knoxville, I was inducted with Debbie Ryan.
Oh my gosh. That's why. That's awesome.
And we're very, 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 very close friends. And she said, Patty, I don't have a national championship because I said, I know. And I said, I think about that today. I think about that. And then when I see Dawn Staley, who we are very, you know, we've become friends through adversity, right?
Sure. Right.
So, and whenever I see her, she says, Patty, I have every championship there is to have. WNBA, Olympics, NCAA coach. I don't have one. NCAA as a player. And, you know, so through, like I said, through adversity and through some of the good times and the great women that you worked with over the years, you get, you gain relationships. You can laugh about it now. I wasn't laughing about it then, but it still haunts me today.
Oh, I can imagine. I would say I could, that does not surprise me. I think that was.
You don't intend for these things to happen. No. And referees, when they're out there, you know, they're going to make mistakes because they're human, and they have calls where there's no intent to blow a call or to miss a call or to misapply a rule or anything like that. No intentions. It's very, very, very devastating, and very, you know, it weighs on officials because you don't like to make mistakes, and sometimes they become impactful. Of course, I could go back and say, did you hit all your free throws? Did you hit all your shots? Did you not throw the ball away? But, you know, when they happen in the last minute of a really close game or something like that, I mean, they stick out like you know, a sore thumb. And now, today, we have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 camera angles on an 8-4 game. You know, you've seen what goes on in football. You've seen what goes on in college football, you know, the NFL. They got they got 10 cameras just on the end zone.
And that, you know, that play would have been reviewed. That play would have been reviewed, and you would have counted the basket, and everybody would have moved on happily. But at that time, there's no
way. We didn't have technology. So technology is
incredible.
Is it's great. But it also can be, because you are in a fishbowl. And you know, Jane, sometimes you sit over and when you broadcast or do whatever, and of course I know you're on radio, but at times you look at a play sitting down and you're like, you get an angle and you're like, you know, well, you know, referees, they have one camera angle.
It's their
brain. And their eyes, and whether or not they have, you know, a good look at the play with all these unbelievable, extraordinary athletes that have been working out since they, you know, could walk. Nowadays in girls' sports, you know, chasing them up and down the floor. That it's easy sitting and watching it on TV or watching it on replay or watching it frame by frame by frame. And referees referees don't get that. They don't get that luxury. They'd love to have it.
Well, of course,
they don't get that luxury.
No, and I think that that's something. It's in real time, and it's we're all. And then not only do we have the cameras, but we also live in a very critical society. So, you know, the element. Let's talk a little bit about that as an official. And you were for a very long time, and now you oversee, you coordinate officials. So you're still heavily involved in the game. Talk a little bit about how do, you know, does someone become an official? What's some of the critical characteristics? You got to have thick skin. You got to have all these things. Talk about what it's like being an official in those situations.
Well, I think the most important part in officiating at any level is to have common sense.
Yeah.
You know, we can teach X's and O's. And as a player, you know, you look at film, you know what your plays are, you know where you're supposed to go. But to have a feel, an instinct for the game, and people person skills. How do you manage volatile situations? How do you manage benches? How do you manage players? You know, are you approachable? But at the same time, you have to know the rules. You have to know what the mechanics are. But at the same time, you've got to be able to manage a game with common sense, and sometimes to be so pure and so, as they say, black and white. You know, those are the cookie cutter officials. The real officials are the ones that can do that, and at the same time deal with personalities. With great people, person skills, communication. Look at all the different players that we have at any level, all the coaches we have at any level, all the personalities that are in this game. And if you don't have coping skills, if you don't know how to respond, if you are out there with major ego and, you know, the whistle makes me this authoritarian figure, you got to be able to let players and coaches know that you can talk to them, have it be a great, wonderful experience for them as they're doing it, and hopefully what they take from it as they leave the sport, if they leave the sport, or, you know, become an adult, and you know, how it makes them a better citizen and a better person.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? That's the thing. I remember you doing very, very well, because why do I know you and have a conversation with you every time I see you? Because of our relationship we had on the floor, you know, and you called multiple fouls on me over, and, you know, because I was fouling probably, but at the time I never thought I fouled, but we still had a good relationship because you would talk to me, we would smile, we would laugh, and all those things are so critical for that relationship on the floor to make the flow of the game go. You know, we always say the best officiated game is the one when you didn't notice the officials. But as a player, having that relationship with the officials was always, I think it was a great thing. So,
I think building relationships, because, you know, the tone is, if you're a referee, of course, we've gotten away on the women's side with the big black and white striped shirts, because that has a message right there that, okay, they're an authoritative figure. Yeah. And they're the boss, they rule, they got the hammer. You know, which was, I always had a major problem with those kinds of things, because, you know, I didn't want people to feel like we were that way at any level. And that's, I think, as I have trained over the years and identified, recruited, developed, you know, dealt with their continuing education, looked at video, study rule books, go to camps, all those kinds of things. What's most important to me is, how can you help facilitate? How do you manage the game? Yeah. What do you bring to it that is the people person part of what athletics is, especially at the high school and college level? You know, you get to the pro level, you know, things become more of a business.
Sure.
At the high school level, we still have kids to get to class, and we want kids to graduate and want them to have good scores. And we want them to not just do sports. We want them to get into, you know, clubs and different kinds of civics and citizens and how to learn to be a good person, to where when you get into college now, Division two and three, you still kind of have that amateur athletics. But as we're getting into the Division one and some of the Power Four conferences, it has become, with NIL and the transfer portal and social media and, you know, just a variety of other things. We've kind of moved away from that. Not to say that I'm not opposed to NIL. I love that the women are making money and things like that. But, do we need to manage it a little bit better? Probably. Yeah. But I think it's exciting that they have these opportunities. They just have to learn how cope with it. It's just different. And the social media, oh my goodness.
I know. I know. But it's, I think I want to, it is, it's tough in a lot of ways, but to your point, you know, you talk about how the game has changed. You talked about the uniform, things like that, from your perspective as an official and looking at where our game is now compared to when you first started. I mean, there's so many amazing things. You've got to be thrilled that we are getting eyes on our games and people are, you know, getting paid, and there is some prime time opportunities for women athletes, especially in the girls basketball and going into, you know, the WNBA and things like that. Speak to that, as, because from someone who's seen it from the very beginning to where it is now.
It is absolutely incredible, thrilling, exciting. Honestly, I'm not sure I'd still have the passion and the desire and the want to do what I'm doing and have been doing for a really long time if it weren't for that.
Yeah.
Because I've waited so long to walk into an arena with 20,000.
Yeah.
To have 19 million people watch the NCAA championship game more than the men's championship.
Yeah.
Game.
Yes.
You've got the Caitlin Clarks and the Juju Watkins and the Lauren Betts, all these players now that are extraordinary. And you have the Caitlin Clark effect, which is just incredible. The movement, it's not a moment, it's the movement that we have now in women's college basketball. You know, it's kind of like you've arrived.
Yeah.
I've waited so long. I mean, I went to the Iowa DePaul game when they played it in the football stadium.
Outside, year,
outside with, what did we have, 55,000, 60,000, I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
And so I walked out, and I mean, I stood in the middle of the court, which is in the middle of the football field.
Yeah.
And you know, you just, your head is going and you're looking and you're like, and then you have the hospital over there with the little kids that wave in the window.
Yep.
And I'm like, what?
What are we doing? That's awesome.
What is this? And I happened to be able to take my granddaughter.
Oh, awesome.
It was, I think she was 15 at the time. And she was like, oh my goodness. Yeah. My goodness.
That's awesome.
So, that's awesome. But it was, it's just extraordinary. And I'm so happy to be a part of it. It has made me, stay what I'm doing, and it will longer, because I never thought I would see this day ever.
Right. Right. And you are,
I don't want to let go of it.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Two things. You are still coordinating officials. So that is a big part of your life, because you have several conferences and you are, you know, ingrained in that and have been doing that for quite a long time. But, you know, through that job, what is it that you feel like you see? You say, we've arrived. What do we need to do to stay? To keep going and have that opportunity even increase? What do you think we need right now that's really important for women's basketball to kind of have some staying power and keep this going?
Well, obviously, I think it's to continue to have these games on TV, continue to have sponsorship, continue to have people give the women's game the same kind of stage that they've given the men's stage.
Yeah.
And since they have done that, I think those opportunities have grown because of the exposure of our game now.
Yeah.
You know, ESPN, ABC, CBS, Fox, Big Ten Network, Peacock, you name it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the women's games are, you can sit at home and watch them.
Right.
You never were able to do that. And I think as long as that continues, and I believe it will.
Yeah.
Obviously, I believe it will. But I think that's been a major spark of why people know more about women's basketball.
Agreed.
Agreed. And then, you know, then again, we've got to give credit where credit's due. We had a generational player come through.
Mm-hmm.
That made a difference.
Yeah.
And then even for us in the state of Indiana, you know, for Caitlin to be playing with the Fever.
Yes.
And you know, you got Stephanie White.
Yeah. Coming back as her coach. Yeah.
You got Lynn Dunn.
Yes.
I mean, all, you know, a former Purdue coach.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of heritage. The state of Indiana, besides just John Wooden, right?
That's right. That's right. And now it's on the women's basketball side, and we're about to celebrate the 50th state finals coming up, you know, in March 1st, very quickly from here. So we're really excited to celebrate all of that, because we've had such great tradition. And the cool part is, even though you've branched out and, you know, gone to the college game and beyond, you were a part of that history when we first started. So I got one last question for you. If you could go back and tell young Patty Broderick, you know, in the beginning of your officiating career, before you embark on this incredible journey that you've had as a life as an official and an officials observer and an officials coordinator and all these things, what would you tell her? What would you tell young Patty Broderick?
I would say, because of your family, because of just, you know, a little simple, will you coach a little 9-year-old team?
Yeah.
You know, I don't take those steps, Jane.
Yeah.
I don't go with my colleague to do that course in officiating. None of this happens. Yeah. None of this happens. Yeah. I don't have enough nerve to tell my brothers, that's a foul.
Get off. I love that's bag. How it started.
That's foul.
That's great.
You know, and my family now, so supportive.
Yeah.
Wouldn't, I don't know that, that they're a big part of why I have the family that I have today. So, yeah. But that's the craziness of it. Yeah. That's, those things don't happen. All this other stuff. I don't travel the world. I don't have a Naismith Award winner. I don't have a ring from the Hall of Fame. I reffed Shaquille O'Neal. I never would have had those opportunities ever. Yeah. So, it's been rewarding. It's special. I will have to say, as the game has grown and we've gotten to the place where we are nowadays, with the exposure that we have, watch out what you wish for, right? Because there's a lot more pressure.
Sure, absolutely.
A lot more accountability. And, you know, everybody, sometimes officiating is, people think, well, that's why my kid fouled out, or I lost the game.
Yeah.
But it really is not about that. I can't say, you know, there's been times, like I said, mine was in a Final Four game. So they work hard. Officials work so hard to be perfect, but they're not perfect. They're human beings. And they're going to do the best they can, and they're going to learn from their mistakes. And I coach my officiating team just like a coach coaches their players.
That's right.
I don't want to make mistakes. I want to look at video, and we have to learn from them, and we have to move forward, and you have to accept and have responsibility when you do have a mistake. But what, how do you respond and how do you learn from that? So,
And you're speaking the truth. I am the one who assigns the officials for the tournament. And it's important to them, and they work very hard, and they ask for film, and we have conversations about things that have happened. And it's just an incredible group of people who really do want to, you know, give to the not just the women's or girls basketball in the state of Indiana, but just to student athletes, to kids. And they do hold themselves accountable. I think that that's an important part of your improvement as an official. And that's why we get the best ones to do our state finals and things like that. So that's coming up. So,
You know, winning and losing is a big part of our business and our community. And so in a society that we win and that we live in, winning is but, you know, I feel like those that lose are the winners because they're the ones that grow and learn. And how do we go forward? So winning is not always the ultimate. I mean, it's great. It's great. But, you know, are you a winner when you lose?
Yeah, that's a good point, Patty, and so true, and such great words of wisdom for all of us. And one of the things that we want is we want more, not only, you know, more female officials, but we want more people, young people, to get into officiating, because we definitely have a need for it in our state, and probably in every state, but in just in our world, that we need young people to kind of enter into that. And I'm thankful that you had the opportunity and someone encouraged you. And so hopefully we can do that for someone like you, who is a young person wanting to get into officiating in the future. So,
I hope so. You know, it's hard to get women, and especially women, you know, because a lot of them have their families, and We don't pay a whole lot on the high school level. So, you know, there's people that gravitate to the college level because obviously game fees are higher. So that's a hard thing. That's a hard thing for you. But I think you guys are doing a great job in trying to educate your fans and your athletic directors and your parents and your grandmas and your grandpas that, you know, we could put you out there and let you do it.
It's true.
You know, we're trying to train and educate and do the best that we can to get qualified people. So you got to give us a little bit of a, you got to be a little kinder and gentler.
That's true. That's what we all need. Well, Patty, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today. And for all of you who've been listening, tune in next time as we get to talk to another legend of Indiana basketball as we head to the 50th state finals.
Thank you for joining us on the IHSA Insider. Tune in next time for more conversations with the legends of Indiana high school girls basketball. And remember, this is your IHSAA.